everybody.
Welcome back to Prosecco Theory.
I'm Michelle.
And I am Megan, and we have two special guests with us today.
We do. We have our friends Keith and Amber here today. Say hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
You're welcome. Clever already.
I know. Yay.
We only have witty people on this
That's
show.
That's right. We only know witty people.
So, Michelle, what are we going to talk about today?
You know what? We're going to talk about sex clubs.
So we want to talk about this because we are on this perpetual mission to, you know, remove the stereotype and the stigmatization from issues that, you know, we think are just things that are fear-based because people don't really understand. And as everybody knows, yep. We are pretty sex positive. If you've listened to our prior episodes, you should be clear on that at this point. And the reality is that these sex clubs and swingers clubs, which some people call them, exist all over.
Even in your town.
They are that popular because there are that many people who are interested in finding a healthy way to express their sexuality. And it's probably not what you envision in your mind. If you've seen Eyes Wide Shut, that's not what it's like.
I mean, I bet those places exist.
I would go to that place, sure. But that's not what it normally is like.
Yeah, I think that it's really important, and we've talked about this a lot, to try to normalize a lot of this stuff. And not so that everyone then goes and does it. That's not my goal with wanting to talk about this stuff, is to tell everybody you should be doing this too. But to remove the judgment around it. Like, just because somebody else is doing this, but you don't understand it, you are afraid of it, you have shame about the topic when you think about it, doesn't mean that you need to judge someone else for their choices on these things.
Well, a lot of fear is eradicated through education. So
exactly.
Michelle and I are looking forward to a little education ourselves today because we have done our homework like we always do, but we are not sex club regulars. So we just happen to know some folks that are, and we thought we would bring them in to give us all their great expertise.
Is that a fair characterization?
No, I don't. I think that we've been five or six times.
That's five or six times more than I've gone.
Yeah. Me too.
It seems utterly normal now.
Okay, can you guys take us back to when you first decided to go to a sex club? Why did you decide to do that? And what were you anticipating?
God, what was I anticipating? Nothing that it actually was.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. I had never even thought about anything remotely close to a sex club or...
Are you trying to say this was all Keith's idea?
It was all Keith's fantastic idea.
There you go.
Yes. it's not anything I would have ever imagined myself being in because I had all of the same, you know, misconceptions that I'm sure many people do about it being the dark, seedy side of sex that normal people, upstanding citizens, people with morals, they didn't do that
not
kind
us.
Of stuff. And I was not like, I was that person. I was upstanding. You know, I went to church for 10 years and was like very into that. And so when I met Keith and he started talking about things like that, it was both terrifying and incredibly liberating to think about the possibility of being that person that I had always kind of shoved down because it didn't fit in my little box of being a good girl. So,
and now you get to put other things in your box.
I know, I get to put lots of things in my box.
Yay!
So, Keith, was this something you'd already experienced before you met Amber, or did you feel like you wanted to experience this with her if she was open to it for the first time?
I think overall, it was all a graduation or an evolution. You know, you start out things that you want to do or explore with somebody, and especially when you're in a new relationship. I think that I probably had a lot of different experiences in life and different places doing a lot of different things that she didn't have. And it wasn't like a right away thing like, oh, hey, I like you. Let's go to the sex club.
First date?
You know, like I said, it evolved and, you know, she learned to be more comfortable with her body. She learned to be more comfortable with me and doing things. And it just kind of graduated to like, hey, what do you think about this idea?
Well, no doubt some of that increase in comfort was due to her trust in you.
Oh,
is that a fair statement?
Absolutely.
Okay, so how many years ago was it?
Well, we've only been together for almost 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, February will be 3 years. Is that even a year into the relationship? It progressed really quickly with us.
Yeah, it was like 6 months later.
Yeah.
No, it was like in November, I think.
Yeah. So it wasn't too far into our relationship, but when I met him, I had already started to like unfurl from this like tightly bound, you know, mannerism in which I lived. And ironically enough, going to the Korean spa was like the start of it for me. To sit in a place that was very safe and watching all of these women walk around and going, holy shit, we are all just like little caricatures. We just have lumps and bumps in different places, but oh my God, there is not two of us that look anything alike. That really started sparking for me, like, oh, there's got to be other stuff out there that's going to help give me this same like aha of sitting in that spa.
It's liberating.
Oh, for sure.
A lot of people might not know what you mean when you say Korean spa. Like, I know what you mean because I live here, but...
I love the Korean spa.
Michelle, you've done that a lot,
Yeah, I've been a few times.
So explain what it's like so that they can understand what Amber's talking about.
Sure. So typically you go in and maybe you've scheduled a massage or a body scrub or something, or maybe you're just buying a day pass to hang out in their pools. It's a facility where they have a bunch of different temperature pools that you can just sort of lounge in. There are different rooms that are mostly on the very warm side to very hot side, like little sauna rooms, a sand room and a salt room and a charcoal room and whatever. And they all do different things. It's just this place where you just feel pampered. Even in the moments where you're not getting a service from one of the people who works there, it's just this incredible, free, calm environment.
So are you naked the whole time? Is that what
Completely naked.
Okay.
Yep. As soon as you get into the locker room, you fucking disrobe, you take a shower, you stuff your robe in a cubby, and you hop in a pool. Yeah.
Keith, could you imagine doing that with a bunch of men?
Yeah. Actually. So she knows that this is a point of contention for me because I spent some time in Germany.
I think that's fair.
Where we're all allowed to be grown-ups.
Yeah.
There's a place where, you know, adults only, it's full nudity. And it's co-ed. Some places, they do gender-specific, certain days, certain times. But general population is everybody goes in, be an adult, buck naked, go into the sauna. And so for a place like this in America, we can't be full-blown adults and be grown-ups about it. Like, so where is the men's spa?
Snohomish, like, the gated sanctuary.
Are we going to get to that?
We're going to get to that. Okay, great. Yeah. But I do want to say one thing about the spa, because not only being naked around other women in a place that was completely safe, but I got a body scrub.
Yes.
And that was probably the first time that I had allowed myself to allow someone's hands on me that wasn't sexual but felt really good.
Yeah, and they don't fuck around. Those scrubs, I mean, your uterus is clean when you get out of there. It's those loofahs are up in places.
Woo!
It's thorough. Yes.
Your butt crack is very, very shiny. And they, you know, and they scrub your tits.
He's like, right? What did I get myself into?
These are the things I didn't know. Yeah. It's a game changer.
The last one I went to, I swear she spent extra time on my boobs. And I was like, I mean, have at it, lady. This feels great.
Maybe they're just very, very dirty.
I think they are, probably. Yes. So, so that was probably like the opening for me of shedding a lifetime of shame around bodies. Like, my mom wasn't even naked in front of me growing up, except for if I caught her in the bathroom, like while she was getting ready, you know? So to be with that, to see the normality of that all, to have someone touch my body and feel pleasure and not have any shame or guilt around it because like I did or didn't want to. So yeah, so that was kind of the start of it for when Keith actually did bring up, hey, what do you think about a sex club? We had already been experimenting with our sex life, and this was kind of like a next step to break out even more, because my goal is like to not stop with what we do. Like, we're constantly trying to shed all of these layers and ascend to different different levels with each other, because like you had mentioned earlier, there is an amount of trust with him that I have never experienced. And that comes from him loving him and being authentically him, because that gives me permission to be authentically me. And then he's constantly speaking to the authentic me that I've shown. So it's just this cycle of just shedding.
It's the best kind of cycle.
Yes.
God damn.
Don't make assumptions about that, you know, because there's different levels of this. It doesn't mean that automatically I want to go to this place and then share my girlfriend with everybody there.
Yeah.
No, this is like, I'd kind of want to watch other people doing things and like kind of like go to school with a demonstrator, you know, and then she, you know, she wanted to be watched. And I'm like, I don't want to be watched, but I want to watch other people. So, you know, we're exploring it and learning it. And still there's nobody else tampering with this. You know, it's still just us and we're enjoying it at our level. And
tampering.
I'm not sure I want to share yet.
And it's a process of getting more comfortable. And not that that necessarily needs to be the end goal, but the more you do it, the more comfortable you get with yourselves. And then you can figure that out.
Yeah.
So interesting that you should bring up that example, because we did read an article called Here's Your Everything to Know Guide on Consensual Exhibitionism. That was by Taylor Andrews for Cosmopolitan. They define exhibitionism as a sexual kink in which the person feels sexual arousal at the idea or reality of being seen naked or engaged in sexual activity by others. And then they define a voyeur as someone who feels sexual arousal by watching someone else nude or doing sexual activities. So they talk about how if two people connect and one is more of an exhibitionist and one is more of a voyeur, then it's often a very good match, because the exhibitionist likes to, you know, feel that like appreciation of their body and their sensuality by sharing themselves. And then the voyeur likes that experience of watching. So you guys are probably well matched, with Amber being an exhibitionist and Keith being more of a voyeur. And you can experience all of that at a sex club, right?
Yeah, very much so.
Have you only gone to sex clubs in Seattle?
Yes. Well, I have.
No, I haven't been to any others. This area doesn't seem to have a lot to offer.
Okay.
Get it together, Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think it depends on how deep you want to dive into the culture.
Mm.
I mean, there's websites and communities and groups and things like that. You could definitely escalate and go different routes. But as far as, you know, and especially now COVID, the one place down in Tukwila is shut down. So there's not many places
that
to
Club
go.
Club Sapphire?
Yeah.
Did you have to fill out an application? Because I've read that a lot of these places, you have to fill out an application, submit a photo, and some places even do an interview.
Oh, good God.
There was an article that referenced one place, right, Michelle, where you had to, what did you have to give them?
Your BMI?
Your BMI.
Oh, my God. I don't know which place that was, but fuck those.
We're not going there.
Absolutely not.
No, because, you know, one, there's a woman that goes to the Club Sapphire that has been there every time that we've been there.
Every time?
Yes, every time.
There are people there that are regulars. Like they all know each other by first name.
Okay. Because you can get a membership, right?
Yes.
Do you have to have a membership to go?
So this is the interesting thing. We went once, so you pay for a membership, which is, like, temporary.
Okay.
Different levels of membership. And then you pay for the event as well.
Okay.
So it gets kind of expensive. So after the first time we went, we were like, oh, well, let's pay for a whole year membership and then, let's
good
just
you
pay for the events.
First time, right, to make sure that it was sort of your vibe and you liked
definitely.
It.
But we enjoyed it. It was so liberating for us, to just shed all that, you know, shame and embarrassment. And
judgment.
You know, self-judgment, like everything.
Yeah.
It was just like, okay, we could do this again. Let's get the year membership and then pay for only the events. It still costs you some money, but... You know.
So, like, how much is a year membership? I know you said there's different levels, but...
Yeah, I think it was, like, $100 for the year.
That's not too bad.
The events themselves are...
$60 to $80.
Yeah. Mm.
Dude, I saw an event on their website, I was checking this out, that they do every year, that apparently they like rent out a whole hotel.
Yes.
And they sell it out every year.
Have you been to that?
Oh, not yet.
And I'm not sure that's something that we want to do, because, like I said, we're at the very low-level exhibition voyeur. When you're going to the hotel, this is like full-on debauchery. Like
everybody's
at every
touching
level.
Everybody. It's more of you go because you know you want to swing. And
it's like hotel orgy.
Yeah.
Like, you know you're going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys said you didn't have to fill out an application.
No, but I want to go to that BMI thing.
Because
there's a few women that I've seen at this club, and there's one in particular that every time we go, she's there, and she is a full-figured woman, probably older than we are, so I would guess she's in her 50s, early 50s maybe. She was part of the event that we went to was like a gangbang. So, like, if you wanted to be gangbanged, then you would get, like, the glow necklace or whatever, and then you would give glow necklaces to people you wanted to play in your party.
Oh. Can we go into more detail on that? Because I know that when people hear gangbang, they immediately, like, recoil and think, like, oh right. my God, somebody's getting hurt, yeah. like there's no consent. Like, what does it yeah. mean in this context?
So in this context, it means that you want to have sex with more than one person.
So like maybe it's a fantasy or yeah. you just enjoy.
You just want to taste different flavors.
Oh, and so okay.
then I think you get a certain amount of glow sticks, which are invitations. And so then you would go and hand them out to people who consent in the club. And then that gives them permission to come join your party in one of the rooms. Watching her naked having sex was actually liberating for me because I've always identified much larger than my size. No matter what size I am, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm probably four times bigger.
Okay.
So to watch this woman seemingly unaware of her body movement and just fully enveloped in passion with all of these men and women who weren't perfect models, who did, I mean, it just broke all of the stereotypes for me of what sex was. Two perfect people coming together.
You like know, a movie.
Yes, their mm-hmm. vagina and their penis have fun and that's it. There isn't any kind of like, you know, there's no smell, there's no sound, there's no, I mean, like all of the realness of sex is very wiped clean in my little world that I grew up in my yeah. head. So watching her and watching all of these other people just purely enjoying physical contact with one another was like, holy shit, I am so self-conscious of with somebody that I love and trust, who I know loves me more than I probably love myself most times. And here this woman is able to do it in front of all these people. And I was like, fuck, I want that. Mm-hmm. I want that freedom.
Yeah, I didn't. I wasn't even there, and I want that.
I know.
Just listening to you describe it, I'm like, dang, yes. this sounds amazing.
It's yeah. really crazy what you actually learn to be normal about yeah. yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's happened to me before. Okay, so now I'm normal. This is totally okay now.
It almost sounds to me like society has these stigmas that you've, like, ingrained within yourself. But then you get to be in a different society for an evening or whatever, a different environment where people don't have all those ingrained self-doubts and insecurities and stigmas. And then you're yeah. like, oh, it's acceptable to be this way as well. And I don't have to feel shame or bad about myself mm-hmm. for loving my body and enjoying a sexual experience with somebody. So.
Yeah.
There are a couple things I want to call out from what you just said, because there's an article that we read called What Going to a Sex Club is Actually Like by Rachel Verena for Betches.com. I don't know what that is, but okay. And it's all about when she first kind of got into the world and what her expectations were versus what the reality was once she was there. First of all, one of the expectations she had was we will either be the most or the least attractive people there, mm-hmm. like not knowing what you're walking into in terms of who those other people are going to be. And she said in reality, it was a collection of normal people who were trying their best to look good. Like, you're going out for a night that clearly you want to feel attractive and be attractive to people. And so you're putting some effort in, but it's just a bunch of normal people.
She kind of likened it to like if you were going out to a bar, like you want to look good. People are chatting you up. It's not that different. Was that your experience?
Yeah, I think so. One of the things that I think that helps for all of this is that we're both on this point in our lives where we want to grow and become better people day by day. And so we're learning things like, well, expectations build disappointment sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so clear your mind of the expectations. Let's talk about what we think might happen or what our concerns or hopes, I guess, but remove the expectations. And then I feel like we are both really good looking when we get ready to go to this place. But we also know what's under these clothes. And that's... But we know that that's the case for almost everybody in there.
Right.
Maybe a couple of them are like real gym hounds, you know, really fit. But otherwise, they're dad bod, mom bod.
Mm-hmm.
Like this normal is people. Average, normal people straight yeah. from the street or the office.
I saw one thing. I can't remember what article it was from, but it said that basically the people at the sex club is essentially a good cross section of whatever city you're in. It's going to be very similar to what you would see on the street around you. Except that they won't have clothes on.
So it's worth mentioning too, because I feel like each time we've been there, there's been a different group of people. So going back to the signing the thing, I don't remember that there was one, but there is a mandatory orientation.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Is there a video? Is there an orientation video?
So there is a video, a small orientation video, and then they walk you around, and it's mandatory for singles, especially single men. The rules and the boundaries are extremely important, but I don't remember that there was a thing that we had to sign or anything like
no,
that.
No, there was no like interview type. No, we just showed up, paid our money.
the orientation.
Yeah, because we were a couple. Like, if you're a man, though, a single man, you are required to go, I think it's on a Wednesday or something, to go and do everything separately. And you are not allowed in the play area, which is where all the sex happens. You aren't allowed in there without another person.
So, Keith, what are some of the rules? Like, what are some of the rules for guys or just in general that you have to follow?
For the single men, there's a portion of the changing room, and the changing area is, but there's a section that's just for the single men. So they're not out there, like, perusing through people, and when kind of like when you're vulnerable, you know, you're changing or showering or whatever. But there's a don't stand at the door and watch into the rooms kind of rule. Like, if you're going back there, you have to have an invitation. You have to be with somebody.
Okay.
And especially for the single people, that's important. And where I was going with that is you kind of have to go on different nights. Like, there might be on a Friday night, a bi or gay night.
Like an event happening that night?
Right.
Which doesn't mean you have to be bi or gay.
Yeah.
Because we've gone on bi night before.
Yeah.
I think it's just if you do identify as any of these, then you can actually go and feel more comfortable with that. And you know and that you're going to find others.
It's like watch their calendar to make sure you're going to go on a night that...
Well, right. Because if you're hoping for a gangbang and you go on by gay night, it might be very different for you.
You'd be really disappointed if you're like, God, I really wanted a gangbang tonight.
There's a lot of swords in here.
I think it's really important to talk about consent. I think a lot of people are probably conceptualizing this and thinking, you know, as a woman, I walk into this place and then anyone can just touch me and do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. And it's not that at all. There's a quote from an article called What to Expect Your First Time at a Sex Club by Vanessa Marin for Life Hacker. She says, people who identify as part of a kinky community tend to be far more tuned in to the importance of consent than most people. And I think allowing yourself the freedom to think about sex in a different way and to engage in sex in a different way, you also end up thinking more about how other people are experiencing that. Consent becomes something you think about more. And so places like this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like places like this, you're going to have a much more consensual experience than at your random fucking bar on a Friday night where some dude grabs your ass and wants your number. Right?
Absolutely. I'm more comfortable walking around that place naked or half naked if you're in there's a nightclub aspect to it too, where you need to be clothed or partially clothed when you're out in that area. I'm more comfortable there than I ever would be at a club.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, my niece talks about being at a bar one night and some guy actually grabbed her pussy at the bar. That would never happen at the sex club.
Goddamn.
I mean...
And you'd be out real quick.
Oh, okay.
Because that's good to know. Security, right?
Yes.
There are people, enforcing the rules.
Yeah. They're volunteers.
Wait, the security is their volunteers?
They have a small group of paid staff members that work at the counter and then that are part of the security team. But there are people in the community because this is a community kind of thing, you know, and it's a culture. So then it goes to the cleanliness. So there's a mattress cover. And then there's towels and everything that you would need, like lubrication, condoms, all that kind of stuff, is provided in each room. And then the volunteer walks the hallway. One enforces the rules, make sure that there's nobody just gawking or, you know, single people aren't intruding or, that there is consent. Yeah, being creepers. And then they also go in there, like when you're done with whatever you're doing, you lift the corner off the mattress. And then that person knows to go in there and change the mattress cover. And then it's ready to go for the next group of people.
So that was something that was not surprising to me, but I guess I would say I was impressed by as I was reading all these articles where they were talking about what a clean environment it actually is, because people envision this like seedy, you know, like gross, I'm going to have sex on a bed that like 10 other people had sex on. But really, it's not like that. I mean, there are in some clubs, it sounds like paid staff, and then like maybe in this situation, it's volunteers, but everything is completely cleaned and changed as soon as like one couple or somebody exits the room before somebody else comes in. And also it sounds like there is a plethora of protection available, like condoms, dental dams, lube, whatever. And then I even read that at some places you can't even become a member until you've provided evidence of a clean bill of sexual health. So in addition to being very pro-consent, it's also a lot cleaner and safer than you would expect in some cases, maybe even cleaner and safer than meeting someone at a bar and taking them home that night. So
absolutely,
that stigma, I think, definitely should go out the window, because in order for these clubs to exist, they've had to think really carefully about, like, what is going to turn people off from coming. Mm-hmm. And if they feel like it's not going to be safe or it's not going to be clean, they're not going to go. And it seems like in large part that these clubs are very pro-consent and very pro-sanitary and cleanliness.
Absolutely.
Like I said, it's their community. It's their culture, and they appreciate it, so they care about it, and they want it to remain intact. They don't want it to be jeopardized. Mm-hmm. And because it is such a taboo thing, I think, mm-hmm. that, you know, you have to pay that extra effort to protect it.
Mm-hmm. So I want to give you, like, a tour of...
Please do.
Yes.
it is next door to a casino.
Perfect.
Which is way seedier, I guarantee you, than the little club.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it's in a business park, and it's like, there's like a Comcast or something. I mean, there's some, like, you know, just normal business, right?
Strip mall sex club?
Yes.
It's behind the Chamber of Commerce.
Chamber of Commerce.
That's what it was.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Yes. And there's just a little sandwich board that points in, and so you walk in the doors, you walk into the office suite. They've got, like, some cool club chairs and lounge couches and stuff in there. You can take your coat off. It's where you check in. They give you a band, you know, they give you a locker.
And then what's the band for?
Oh, just to show that you're allowed to be in there.
Okay. Yeah.
And then they have a little room in there where they take you to do the orientation, which is a video, which kind of goes over all of the same rules. You know, no voyeurism, that's unwanted. Mm-hmm. So you can't creep at the doors. And consent is huge. And then you walk through that into the club scene, which it's like a nightclub. They have a VIP lounge, they call it. White leather couches, stripper poles in the middle. It's kind of raised up. They have food there. It's a great little snack bar.
Yeah. It's a really snack bar. Little bit plus.
Yeah.
Work up an appetite there.
Yes. Right? Yes, you will. So it is BYOB. So there is a bar there that they have mixers and things like that. You bring your alcohol, they tag it, you go to them, you ask for whatever it is that you want, and they'll make your drinks for you. And then if you want to go to the playrooms, you go through another door. No drinks or liquids are allowed back there. I think you can take a bottle of water if
only
it's sealed.
Wait, why do you think that is?
Oh, because people are sloppy as hell.
Oh. Well, and because you're drinking on one side or doing whatever you're doing, and then going in there, it's going to get messy.
Separate spaces.
If a kamikaze spills on the floor, it gets extra sticky.
Extra sticky, yes. And they don't know how to clean that up.
Right.
Yeah.
All about the cleanliness. I love it.
Yeah. So they do have, like he said, they have a locker area for the single men, which as a woman is nice to know that if you're a single man, you've been vetted, and they watch to make sure that there isn't a single man running around there. We did have one experience where there was an older gentleman that was, it was the first time I ever creepy. Felt like, oh, that's what creepy feels like in this place. I had never experienced it. But so they take you for a tour. So it's a large open room with a bed in the middle that's got some screening there. So if you're an exhibitionist like me, voyeur like him, that's a perfect place to go.
Okay.
And then there's chairs just to lounge around. So around that area are different rooms. So there's a playroom that is just for two, and it has a curtain and a sign that says no peeking. So that's a place to go if you don't want to be watched. Mm-hmm. All of the other rooms have curtains, and so you're asked to respect that. If you want to take a peek, that's fine, but no standing there watching. They've turned one of the rooms into kind of the BDSM room, so it's got the cross on there. It's got a paddling table.
Sorry, what's the cross?
Oh.
It's an Andrew's cross.
St. Andrew's cross.
Like X.
Yes. Arms up, legs spread, everything's tied down. Yes.
I also want to hear about the paddling table.
Yeah. It's my favorite.
Amber likes the paddling.
We should have brought the flogger.
Okay, so we'll have to do this again.
Then. Yes. So they have that room, and the bed has like some really great metal bars that you can tie and attach things to and whatnot. But there's only one bed in that room. And it's a large bed, but there's only one bed.
Is there ever, like, a wait? Like,
yes.
Like,
I want to stand in lines, though.
This line's not worth it. Oh, I'm going to go to my second choice room.
We just wander around until we find where we want to be at that moment. Because it's not just, like, for us, it's not one and done. We don't go into one room, play, and then we're all done. Like, it's like an all-night event, which is very... It's so different from what I was accustomed to, because it was like, no, you have sex to have an orgasm and then you're done. Yeah. And this is all about, no, this is like explore each other, explore other people if that's your thing. But so then the second room is two tiers and it's got mattresses on the floor. They're probably king size type mattresses. There's a couple of those, and then there's an upper level with a couple more. And it also has a, I don't know what that table's called. It's great for giving and receiving head.
Oh.
And being tied to.
What's the purpose of all the beds in one room?
So that more than one couple can play.
Well, right, I assume. Yes. That. Is it like people are sexually aroused by like having sex and knowing that someone else is having sex?
Yeah, oh, yes.
Right by them? Okay.
Yes. The biggest playroom, I don't even know how many mattresses. There's a couple of tiers.
Oh, yeah.
There's bunk beds, so you can. We like to go up high because then you can look down and watch everything that's happening.
Oh yeah,
okay.
That's
yeah.
a good one.
It's a good one.
His eyes got real wide.
Do you like leave a tip for the person you know is going to come in and clean and get everything ready when you're done, or do you just consider that to be like kind of part of your membership, what you pay for?
They should do that, but they don't do, as far as I know, since the last time we were there, there wasn't any way to tip
anybody. Well, where would you keep cash, Megan?
Well, their dress.
Yeah, but like, where would I have cash on me to then leave for someone?
Well, not everyone walks around naked, from what I understand.
Okay, but if I'm on the bed that needs the sheets changed, I probably don't have a whole lot left on.
Well, so all good points. So the first time I went, I had a key for the locker, the padlock, and I'm like, okay, what am I going to do with this key now?
Right?
Because,
no
pockets.
No pockets.
I'm walking around in my boxers, you know. Yeah. But you can walk around fully clothed from one point to the other and then hang up your clothes and when you go in the room, and so you potentially, somebody could have their money and
sounds that like it'd be a little risky.
It's kind of alleviated of that need, I guess.
Well, I guess if nobody's tipping, then you don't feel obligated. I was just curious. Yes.
Well, and the other thing that I like, too, one of the rules that they have is that you are to be in the same state of undress as those around you. Yeah. So if you're going into one of the rooms where everybody's having sex, you don't just stand there fully clothed.
That would be weird.
So if you want to be a voyeur, sit down. And watch. And we actually had... Sit your ass down. Let me show you a little something. We had an experience one time that was actually exhilarating for me because we were in the last room, which is kind of unremarkable as far as there's not like one specific thing. Oh, it has a wall of mirrors. That's right.
Oh.
That's where the gangbang was. So when we were in there playing, and there was a man, I don't know if he even had someone with him, but there was a man in there who was clearly enjoying watching us play. And that was great because he was naked also. Mm-hmm. But if he would have been fully clothed watching us play, there's something about that that just creates this weird barrier of...
Like a different level of vulnerability?
Yes.
Can I ask you about the term playing?
Yes.
Because I think for some people, they might be like, that feels creepy. That's like what children do, you know?
Yes.
But is this just part of the terminology and the culture?
I kind of, as weird as this can come off sounding, it is kind of being childlike.
Well, you're just playing around, being silly and free and...
Yes. Okay. I mean, there's
sexually.
A part... Sexually. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a sexual component that you don't want to put in the same sentence as children. However, children themselves are sexual beings who just haven't come to an age where they have a knowledge and appreciation for that.
Right.
And that's great. Let's keep them that way as long as they can. But as an adult, to tap into that part of... This is fun.
And free.
This is joy. This is do what feels... I mean, what kid do you know goes around going, oh, I can't do that. That feels too good.
Right.
Like, but it's like, yay!
The term isn't exclusive to use with children. And so I just wanted to point out that, like, we use it all the time in an adult context, too. Like, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Or, like, you know, work hard, play hard. Like, things like that. Like, it is used for adults in an adult context.
Yeah.
But I do think that when people first hear that, it takes them a minute, like, you're doing what? You're playing? Like.
Well, because sex has a different definition to everybody, and, you know, I, as somebody who was married and divorced and now with somebody else, there's a checklist that sometimes you go through because that's where life is, and so it's like, okay, we're going to kiss, and then we're going to get naked, and we're do a little oral, and then we're going to have sex, and then that's it. Mm-hmm. It's just we're running down the list, right?
Yeah.
But this, there is no real structure. We have our boundaries, but we're going to go and do whatever it is that feels good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So whether it's oral or just spanking, I guess.
Is there some kind of like excitement in the unknown, like when you're going that night? Like, we'll see what this night brings
us. What's going to happen tonight? Yeah. And I think the mood of the club kind of... Oh, I forgot about the new area that they have.
Can we hear about that?
Yeah, so they have a new area that has, I don't even know how many beds all lined up around the room. And they are great because there's like all sorts of stuff for if you're on top to hold on the beds because they're big metal gothic looking beds. But the energy of the night kind of determines how we're going to play.
Yeah.
Really. Sure. And we always go in going, okay, so what are our ground rules? Our hard stops that we're not going to go here, we are going to go here. And we usually end up going in there with all these grand expectations of how we're going to ask other people, or we're going to meet another couple, or we're going to do this and that. And then we're just so happy with each other that we haven't broached that yet.
Yeah.
But it's a place to go to even consider those fantasies, which I never would have considered before.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that you just touched on something really important there, the communication aspect. I say that all the time, that everything should be communicated all the time between everybody, and life would be so much easier if people just said what they were thinking, and that would clear up a lot of misunderstandings.
Oh, man.
Right? So before you go, even if you've been before, you're still talking about what's okay, where you're at. You're checking in a lot more than it sounds like probably a standard couple would on any given day. Like,
yeah.
I think that's huge.
There has to be a communication plus, and I think you see that with a lot of people there too. I mean, there's conversation. It's fun, you know, because we're observing what everybody else is doing. We play a little game called Would You?
Yeah. Ooh, I like that game.
Go, he's a good looking guy, would you? I would think about it.
You know, in the interest of destigmatization, I'd just like to take a moment to say that Keith and Amber are both parents, mature adults. They have good jobs. They're contributing members of the community. I mean, they're your next door neighbor, right? Mm-hmm. They're your colleague at the office. Like, this is not a weird subset group of people that go to these clubs. This is all people you know, right? Who have chosen to be free or explore their sexuality in a way that, it sounds like for you guys at least, brings them closer together as a couple because you understand each other more that way.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Well, and it sure sounds like it keeps it interesting.
It keeps it very interesting.
Very interesting. Because we could actually go and just have a very simple engagement with, you know, between ourselves, but have a great time watching everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, we just talk about it for a while. We're like, man, that was crazy, wasn't
it? It's like live action porn with real
people.
It is
with real. Well, and like we went one night when it was, they have BDSM nights. They have some where they actually teach lessons and things. So they teach you how to do certain things. When we were there that night, they had someone there teaching you how to tie all the different ropes and stuff, which was awesome because I love to be tied and bound. And I think that for most women, it stems from being like the strong woman my whole life and just going, God, if I could just find someone who is big enough to let me be small.
We can relate so much to that. Yep. We talk about that all the time.
Yes. A lot of those conversations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we went there one night when they had that going on. The people that we talked to, everybody was, it was like we're at a coffee shop just chatting about normal stuff, but we're talking about like different ways to get flogged. And they had, you know, and you can watch, like, for how kinky we are in some people's eyes, we are nothing compared to some of the other people who go there, who are really into, like, the sadomasochism, and watching that unfold, instead of it being this, like, oh my God, I can't watch, this is so gross, it was fascinating, because to be able to stand back and watch the humanity portion of that and, you know, what we observe as being psychologically happening between people is fucking exciting.
And do you think that part of it is, you know, in the back of your mind, all the rules and all the requirements for consent and everything, so you know that the parties that are engaging in that aren't doing anything they don't want to do, aren't doing anything that doesn't turn them on. And so, again, it seems like a safe place to, like, appreciate something like that.
All the safeguards are in place, but for me, like, going to the BDSM kink Sunday, every other Sunday.
He knows the schedule.
Do you get brunch?
Keep an eye on it. No drugs, no alcohol in those days because it's BDSM.
Oh. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. So we went. We got to go that one time. And this is where pushing the boundaries in your comfort level. We had bought a flogger. You know, I walked Google and look it up how to use a flogger and got some ideas. And then...
We need to know what a flogger is real quick.
We have a few different types. So we have, you know, that you smack a horse with.
Okay. Little paddle type.
The whip, the whippy thing.
Okay.
Yes. And then we have the paddle, which is a hard surface.
I don't want to go in the wrong direction with this, but...
Is there a wrong direction?
It was back in the day when the Romans were whipping...
Oh. Oh, that direction.
Whipping somebody on the post, you know?
Yeah. That's, you know, cat of nine tails without the knots.
Yes,
right.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, this large hand with leather hanging from it. No knots.
No knots.
But so, floggers are made different.
For people's visualization here, we're talking kinds of whips.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Please continue.
A whipping device for the ass. Thighs. But anyways, so I was like, I'm going to ask this dude, like, and he was in the conversation, he said that he was a sadist. That's how he got off, by inflicting pain.
Which to me, my eyebrows went, huh?
She's very interesting.
Right. But because the safeguards are in place, but what was crazy is, like, I wouldn't think ever my definition of respect would apply to these people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's judgment in that, of course, right? But this guy was respectful and he was kind and was like, could you show me how you use a flogger? Like, is there any other tricks, techniques, like, that you find? And so, yeah, we put her in the stocks. You know, you put your hands in your head in there. That's what they used to put the witch in.
I have such a vision right now.
Yes.
Oh man. Here's Amber in the stocks. This guy's showing us how to flog her ass. Like, there's your bare ass, and he's flogging her. I'm like, all right, cool. I got this, you know? And then just a few feet over against the wall is a St. Andrew's cross. They moved it out from the BDSM room to the big lounge area.
For this event.
Yes.
Ah.
And there were two women there. And so the one on the X and the other one, she had a whole, you know, when the mechanic shows up and rolls out his wrench.
Right?
The little toolkit. Yeah. And you have to untie it and roll it out, and then you have all these wrenches. Well, she had a much larger version of sexual torturing devices.
Yes.
Hmm.
And so all of that was happening over there, and that was pretty incredible to watch.
Amber, I know what you can get Keith for Christmas.
No, because then I would have to be willing to undergo the torture. There's only certain amounts.
And there was some stuff like, okay, we're not at that level.
Electricity. They were using electricity.
Oh,
yes.
Shit.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Wow. That was not... I didn't even get to see this because I'm locked up. I just knew someone was smacking my ass.
Yeah.
It's just like, da-da-da.
Fully enjoying herself.
I'm sure.
Well, yeah, because that for me, you know, Keith is... Even when we are... I don't know if we really call it role playing, but we call it playing when we take out the toys. Like, we have our normal sex life that is he and I connecting on, you know, a much deeper level. And then there's that raw sexuality where we play. And when we take out our toys and stuff, I always know that at any moment, if I just even gave the look, it would be done. He would stop whatever he was doing. So then we go to this club and the sadist is here. And I'm really excited about, like, I want to be taken to my safe word.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if Keith would take me to my safe word.
I've tried a few times.
Because I think there's a level of love there that might prohibit that. Mm-hmm. And so I was super excited. This guy's going to take me to my safe word. I can't wait to know how horrendously awesome this is going to be. And what was really interesting is, even though I couldn't see what was going on behind me, I very much knew that Keith was very much aware of what I might be going through, and he stopped it way sooner than I would have stopped it.
Oh.
And I was sad by that, and also just felt super protected. And this guy afterwards was like, oh, hey, you know, it was just this normal conversation that happened. Like, wait a minute, you just whipped my ass while I was locked up in the stocks. And now we're just talking like, hey, what are you doing this weekend?
And well, and like it preemptive, like I got that little ping inside myself, like, okay, I've hit that limit of, you know, what I'm willing to share. Like, she's really enjoying it.
It was about your limit, not hers.
Right. So I kind of like hit that limit of like, okay, I, you know, this has been good. And I'm ready to stop this.
I think that's super fair.
Yeah.
Were you cool with that?
Oh, like, absolutely.
You knew that was his limit, and so you respected his limit.
Yeah.
Even though it was what was happening to you.
Yeah. I mean, okay. I told him my absolute fantasy would be to have that sadist guy or somebody like that behind me while I'm giving him head locked in there, because that would have been awesome. Oh. Then he might have actually changed his tone a little bit.
Yeah. I feel like you could get on board with that one.
I think he probably could.
Probably could.
Yeah. But there, we talk about it a lot when we go there, because there is an interest of broaching out of our normal heteronormative box that we like to live in, that we're comfortable in. And we talk about changing and growing in that, but it always does come down to that. Like, I don't know how I would be with somebody else giving him that much pleasure. It'd be one thing to like, oh yeah, you want to put your tits in his face, that's fine. You want to touch him, that's fine. But if it gets any further than that, we just never broached that
yet. It's a limit. You're going to have a limit too at some point. You just, basically you're saying you're not sure where it is yet, right?
Yeah.
Well, and like I was saying before, this is all an exploration and a journey. So where you're comfortable now might not be the same as a year from now.
Exactly. Well, and you're not, I can't imagine you can figure it all out in one night.
Of course not.
Right. So did you guys know that there are sex clubs that you can pay like $1 million for a lifetime membership, or what is the...
So, yeah, I went looking because I like to do research, and I'm a very thorough professional, you see. And I thought maybe there was some sort of documentary about this subject. And
how could there not be?
Right? And so I found what turns out to really be more of a reality show than a docuseries, but I think it's from 2009, and it's called Naked Sanctum, and it's about a club that's, I believe it's still in existence today. It's spelled SNCTM, Sanctum, and it started in L.A., It shows really the guy, the owner, his life and how this business runs, but also gives you a glimpse into what's happening. And I mean, it's on Showtime, so it's pretty fucking explicit. What I saw on the show, and again, this is from 2009, was it was $15,000 for a regular membership for the year, and then $100,000 for the, quote, dominance membership for the year. And then this was so long ago that this article we saw about the 10 most notorious sex clubs around the world from last summer, 2019, it says that there's a $20,000 annual pass. Or you can buy a $1 million lifetime option that includes invitations to the Cannes yacht parties and access to secret VIP areas. And this show is fucking fascinating. They've got like the creative director, and she's super excited about creating all the costumes, and she choreographs all of the erotic shows that happen at these parties, and some of them are dinner parties and some of them are like at a club.
Sounds very high end.
Yeah. It started in LA and then it branched out to New York, and then I think it's in Moscow.
I have to imagine that if you have $1 million to invest in this and you want to spend $1 million in this, then you really just embraced the lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
This is like basically how you want your sexual experiences in life to evolve. I would guess that you're not interested in like the traditional, like, get married, have 2.5 kids and a white picket fence.
Well, a lot of the people that were members of this were those people. They just also had this part of themselves.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a mold.
Right. Okay.
There's definitely not a mold.
Yeah, I just think for us it's a part of the relationship.
Is it weird when you go and then the next morning you're like having coffee together and you're like, so when you were vlogging me last night?
Not at all. Not at all. It's, no. It's funny.
I don't know. There's times we just like look at each other like, that was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk.
Oh,
yeah.
That's the
dream. Well, there was one night that we went that we got really high before we went in. And we were in the room that's, you know, off to yourself, and you put the sheet up. And I mean, I was in, like, I don't even know what atmosphere I was in. And then all of a sudden, can I get into detail?
Sure.
So, you know, he's fucking me from behind. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, that is not my vagina anymore.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And it, what was
the accidental anal?
Yes.
But it really was accidental.
It was so accidental. And what was so great about it was that this man stops it and says, I'm too high. I want to make sure I know what I'm doing. And it was like, oh my God, could you fucking keep doing that? Like, you know,
okay, there's high and then there's so high you don't even realize that you made that transition. Like, what? Well, it kind of feels different. What's going on? Okay, I've lost some capacity here. I think we need to take a break.
Yeah. So for us, like, it's a part of our life. It's a part of who we are and who we are unearthing. I can't imagine paying $1 million and having like the majority of our sex life being that part of our sex life.
Right.
Because for us, it's a way to play, but there is a, I think I can speak for both of us, there's an intimacy issue that isn't necessarily present during the play times.
Okay.
This is more, we are like, it's more animalistic, just bringing out the humanity part of us, right? So I just can't even imagine paying $1 million.
Which is why it sounds to me like you balance like your own personal in your home intimate relationship with going out and playing.
Yes.
Occasionally to like have fun with that part.
Yeah. And we play a lot at home.
I hope so, because the clubs aren't open right now.
They're not open.
Yeah.
There's a place where you can actually camp at, and it's part of the nudist association. So it, most of the time it's nudist only. That doesn't, that means that you cannot have sex. But then they have couples weekends where it is okay to have sex. And they were open through the summer because it's outdoor.
Okay.
Yeah, they have a pool and a hot tub, and then everybody brings a dish like a potluck.
It just sounds so normal.
Bring your macaroni salad.
It's really weird because you go and you set up, and there's people with motorhomes and tents or whatever, you name it. So you're going camping. But then when you walk through, there's naked people and people having sex and all kinds of weird stuff going on, and you're like, okay.
It's just hedonism in nature.
This. Yeah.
Yes.
But it was so
fabulous.
Fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Because, well, first of all, just the normalcy of being naked outside, that was something that we hadn't, I mean, I hadn't really ever done. And so the freedom of, you know, oh, we're setting up a tent. We got to get buck naked to set up a tent. Because like the Seinfeld episode where like there's some things you shouldn't do while you're naked. We're like, we've got to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had this gal come up to us as soon as we were setting up our tent. And, you know, we're all standing around naked talking, and she's asking if we're there to play or whatnot. And then later her husband came over to talk to us and finally said, I'm sorry, I just came over because you have amazing tits and I just wanted to look at your tits. And to have, if some guy would have come to me at a bar or a restaurant or normal society and said that to me, I would have been like, okay. But here it was like so normal because it was done in such a, like a respectful way. It's just all of those filters that we do to make other people comfortable. You don't have to wear that filter when you're out with these people.
It sounds to me, just from listening to you guys, that if there was somebody within the community that was really creepy or made people uncomfortable, that the rest of the community would like push that person out, basically, and say, that's not what we're about. Yeah. It's not okay. You can't, you know, make people feel uncomfortable. You can't be creepy. Like, that's not the environment we're creating here. So,
yeah, it's always been, you know, even when we watched those two people on the St. Andrew's Cross dealing with the electricity and way farther than, I mean, I'm like a little kitten, you know, in regards to that. But watching them and thinking if I were up there, it might feel like something was being done to me.
Mm.
But you could very much tell that it was so consensual, and even an unspoken, you know, that there's a word or a look or something that can be said and everything stops. Unlike if something like this were to happen at a bar, there is no safeguard that if you say stop it, some guy's gonna stop.
No, every time I've been tied to a cross and there's been electricity at a bar, things have gone way too far.
Exactly.
What bar is this?
It's not open right now.
You know, people might not know what a safe word is. Maybe you should. I mean, you never, we have a broad audience. You never know. So maybe you should explain a safe word.
Safe word is a word that you each have, a word that you have chosen, that if this word is spoken in any realm, really. I've used my safe word when we've just been like joking around fully clothed, just wrestling, messing with each other, and like he's pinched me too hard or whatever, and I've used my safe word, and he knows I'm not just like, haha, trying to get
like,
away.
Oh, pineapple.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just another safeguard that even if you want to say stop, but you don't really want someone to stop, you just feel like you should say stop, which is where I was in the beginning when we started playing, like, oh, that hurt. and it turned me on, but it's not supposed to turn me on, so I'm supposed to say stop. So it's kind of like a part of like the role play, so to speak, that you're actually, for me, I'm able to get out of the Amber that I am, like you said, with the mom and the business and, you know, the upstanding in my church years ago and all of that, right? I can get out of that and I can put on this other aspect of myself and put the other stuff in the closet. And I get to let this part of me be free. And even in that, no, if I want to go back to that other, all I can do is say my safe word.
I believe that a safe word is absolutely mandatory in the kink and BDSM communities. It's a word that you're not going to use normally in your everyday life, but it's a good word that you can remember and that you'll each remember, and that everything immediately stops. It's kind of like saying freeze, because it's a different mixture of pleasure and pain and good and bad, and sometimes no and stop aren't necessarily no and stop.
If they're part of the consensual play.
Exactly.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, like you know. If you're in the dom position, the dom is the dominant. If you're in the dom position, you know when your partner is saying no for real. But a safe word is a must. You have to have a safe word.
Yeah.
So it's pre-communicated, pre-established.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Yeah.
And I think that there are a lot of different situations for that. Like, because we know each other well enough that, you know, we see little body movements or facial expressions or whatnot, and then we know that the other person is getting to their point.
You can read each other.
But if we were going to go play with other people, oh, fuck yeah, I'm using my safe word.
Do you tell these other people what your safe word is up front?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Anytime you're going to play with anybody who isn't your normal sexual partner, I mean, I'd say have that safe word, put it out there, and go for it.
Again, so, communicate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we haven't gone to the level of swinging yet, where we're, you know, swapping partners, light swap, touching, all that kind of stuff. But that communication, understanding what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable, is what's going to allow for a good time for everybody or not.
Yeah.
So communication has to be open for everybody.
What was the name of the nudist colony?
Arcadia.
Arcadia. So when we went to Arcadia, what I found really interesting about it was we weren't there the first night. So it was like a weekend thing. We weren't there Friday night. We went Saturday night. So everybody, I think, had really experimented sexually with each other Friday night. And then what was hilarious, though, was when the gal was giving us a tour of like where the campsites are, we're passing this outdoor pool, right? And I'm looking at Keith and his eyes are really big. But I'm la, 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 talking to this gal, right? And then we start walking back and he's like, did you see what was happening at the pool? I'm like, no. What was happening at the pool? And it was really interesting because my first reaction was to kind of shrink back, that the sexual activity that we have done in this very safe four-walled arena is now out with absolutely no boundaries, no physical boundary other than a fence. And even me, with where I have ascended from, there was still a snap judgment of, they were doing what? I mean, my goal in all of this is to get to a point where that thought doesn't even occur to me.
What was happening at the pool?
Oh, well, I'll have to let Keith explain, because I didn't see. I heard about it the next night. Apparently, there was a bunch of squirting going on.
Oh,
yes. I didn't see that happening, but
it's impressive if you can see that from afar. Yeah.
So on the other side of the pool, and what she was saying about being clothed, like we were clothed, we just got there. And so I felt like a pervert by watching these people. Everybody's naked and doing their thing and having fun. And we were part of that group as soon as we arrived, but I didn't feel that way. But looking across the pool, trying not to stare, I see a woman on her back, naked. Everybody's naked. And another woman going down on her. And then a man above the first woman, the one that's laying down, she's giving him a blowjob. And then the other man was getting behind his gal. I don't know, wife or girlfriend, whatever. So, and it was unfolding as I was watching. I'm like,
quite the train.
Wow.
Yes, it was quite the train.
That was cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the welcoming committee.
We came to the right place at the right time.
But then that night, there was a big campfire, and everybody's sitting around the campfire, and yes, we had our clothes on, because it was cold, but it was really so much more social than I had anticipated.
Oh, yeah.
There was a couple there, there were a black couple, and they were even talking about how black people don't do this.
Oh.
Like, for them, they were trying to put out there, like, how abnormal in their community that they were from, that this was not normal. So then it brought out this whole conversation where he was asking questions. It was like he was our MC all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And asking these really awesome questions, and we were going around the fire, and we're all, like, really getting to know each other. as dudes are sitting there with their cocks out getting masturbated by their girlfriends and tits are coming out. And it was just that mix of it all that makes it seem so much more normal than I ever thought it would be in my head thinking about it before I'd experienced it.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, very surreal.
Oh, I would
think. I cannot believe we are sitting around this fire right now having my dick stroked. Having this conversation with all these people.
Yes. Like, yeah, and at one point, one of the guys that was there, we were talking about what our fantasies were, and he was saying his biggest fantasy is to, you know, be all GQ'd up with a glass of wine in his hand and just women lined up behind him, just boobs. And so we decided to make that a reality.
Oh,
so
sure.
All of us, you know, got our tops off. It was the most horrendous picture. I mean, the guy who was taking it was kind enough to make sure he cut off all of the heads of the women, but it was nowhere near what his fantasy probably was.
Lighting and a setting. And yes. Yeah,
the campfire lighting's not actually that great for photography.
Good on you for trying to make his dream a reality.
Yeah. And there was one gal that, well, actually it was the MC's partner, girlfriend, whatever, who was making a very earnest appeal to men. She just liked to suck cock. Any cock would do. And she just,
strange cock. Yes. She absolutely wanted a cock in her mouth.
Yeah.
In a dick sucking mood. That was on our WAP episode.
Yeah. Yes. I have those moods also, which is very different from my life before Keith. Oh, yeah. I think I'd only given head a few times before we met. I mean, all the stuff, I just hated it. I hate it all. I hated going down or having anyone go down on me or going down on anyone else. And now it's like my favorite thing in the world.
Do you think that was from the shame of the idea of sex being bad and private and, you know, shameful growing up?
Yeah. Well, and I didn't know how. I mean, you know, I'm going to be 47 next week. The internet was not what it is now. Right. So I couldn't just like Google how to give a blowjob. And fumbly hands of youth. It was uncomfortable, and I wasn't comfortable in my own body. I didn't even want to touch my own body, let alone have somebody else's face down there in my pussy. You know, it's like, no!
That is a tragedy because it's amazing.
Well, it's amazing when you have someone who knows what they're doing.
True.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey, and it's been so much more normal than I ever thought that it was, that I ever prejudged that any of it was.
Yeah.
I mean, we even considered at some point, like, we should just record our escapades. People would pay to watch this, and we actually talked about doing that.
Yeah. Like, alternative income source, yes.
Yeah.
Maybe this is the beginning of all that. Yeah. If you'd like to contact Keith and Amber to offer them a deal, you can come through us.
That's right.
Yes, we may actually think about that.
Live demonstrations.
Yeah.
Is there anything else about sex clubs and that environment that we haven't touched on that you really want people to know or understand?
And I think I would just reiterate the controlled environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for me, especially the first time we went in, I had absolutely no idea what to expect. Porn wasn't even something that I really watched. So the thought of normal people having sex and what might happen to me in that environment. So even what they were telling us in the orientation about everybody has to consent, you have to consent, you have to consent. I mean, they drill it in your head. I still in my mind was thinking, no, I'm going to be out on a dance club and some guy's going to be touching my ass or some guy, you know, he's going to reach over and touch my tit. None of that happened. And we were approached twice by a single man asking if we would want to play.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the asking, there was such respect for, no, we're just here to play with each other. There was no guilt, no shame, no bad looks, nothing. It was just, oh, okay.
Where else is that a thing?
Yeah.
Where in life do we as women feel completely comfortable turning someone down?
Yeah.
Never.
No.
It doesn't fucking happen.
Yeah.
That's incredible. That's how it fucking should be.
Yeah. Well, and that was how I grew up. Like, oh, some guy asks you to do something or shows interest as a woman. Mm-hmm. That is your badge of honor. You go and you do it. Doesn't matter how you feel. You just do it.
Ugh.
So to be in a place now where I'm like, everybody's naked, fucking flogging, doing everything.
Electrocuting each other, whatever.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Ever float your boat.
With people who are more respectful than the people that I meet on my day-to-day job.
Right.
Is pretty mind-blowing.
That's incredible.
What about you, Keith? Anything you want to say?
Courage, personal courage to break boundaries. A little bit of humility to say what I want isn't more important than what you want.
Mm.
A little bit of equal voice in that communication process. giving each other value and what we want.
Yeah.
It's very important. I don't think it's for a weak or fragile relationship. If you can't agree on a regular basis on simple things, this is not where you're going to go. And I think as we've discussed the different clubs, every club is different. I'm pretty sure Sapphire is ran by a couple that has been in the swing community for a long time. And so everything is established for a reason, and it's the safeguards, the rules. You know, they don't serve booze, but they can serve the booze that you bring. So not having liquor license, like everything is set up the way that they would like to have it for the community, to support the community. But having the courage to like really... I meant to bring a picture to show you what I looked like at 14, you know, the typical standing for a photo with your arms across your abdomen, like that discomfort with your body, like that was like, and you know, here my brother's fit, he looks good, and I knew there was something different about me that didn't look good. So it's taken a lot of time and courage to get to this comfort level. Like, women will like you if you're confident. Well, how do you get to be confident? You have to start to see yourself comfortably, be comfortable with yourself. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about toxic masculinity. And I would be one to jump on that and say, you guys don't even know what the discussion's about because I lived it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm to a point now where I could look back and I've seen these things and I know that it was toxic. Even if it was just thoughts in my head, just limitations, if you just a little bit of courage, and then you'll start to see comfort in yourself and who you are and your body type, and then that person that you're with is going to foster that with you because they have that going for themselves, and then a lot of things are possible.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about, I mean, we talked a lot about, and especially because three women, we understand what it's like to break through the I'm a strong woman and now I want to be subservient. But for a man to actually be a dom, and I guess the type of dom that Keith is might be a little different than what some people think, because he's not the type that, it's not 50 Shades of Grey where he wants to decide what I'm eating or whatnot. It's just when we're playing and stuff. But the courage that it takes for a man to actually ask for what he wants from a, not just some random woman, but a woman who loves him is, it's pretty amazing. It's a multi-layered event.
And I appreciate the point that you just made, Keith, because we've talked a lot on our podcast about what women experience in trying to like find a way to love their body and who they are and everything they're fighting against in like society and all the expectations that they think are out there, and then they just assume all of those things as everyday logic. And we haven't talked as much because, you know, our frame of reference or our lens is to women, but about what men go through in the same regard. I mean, young men also experience this pressure and
expectation
of like who you're going to be, what you're going to look like, probably, you know, just as much as women, like internalize some of that and impacts their confidence level and their security. So I appreciate what you're saying about like coming full circle and this being a way to, I don't know if help you is the right word, but like, I guess I would say help you appreciate your body and your desires and just like come to a healthy place of acceptance, I guess, with who you are and what your desire is and your relationship with women.
I have a little bit of gratitude. You know, we've talked about this before where, you know, I've never been one to jump on a soapbox and fight for a cause or get behind a cause just because it wasn't my fight, I guess. But now I'm in a place where I can have gratitude for the fight that people have had for equality, like the LGBTQ movement and so on and so forth. There's so many out there. People have been out there fighting the fight so that way an average guy like me can be comfortable in his own skin. We're not where we need to be, but we've gained a lot of ground. There was never a time before in my life where culturally it would be okay to go to a sex club and watch two men have sex and then say that I like that. Liked watching that. That was interesting. That was, man, my eyes were glued. And I can't talk about that when I leave this place because men are supposed to be a certain way. And then otherwise you're in another category, the way we label and categorize ourselves and what our comfort level is in that.
And it comes full circle back to what we were saying in the beginning about fear-based stigmatization. Yeah. You know, like you weren't supposed to be comfortable with that.
Right.
You were supposed to fear it as something odd or strange or something that you weren't supposed to appreciate. But if you can get rid of of that stigmatized fear and just appreciate the love or desire or sensuality those two people have for each other without having all those preset rules, then I imagine that's very freeing.
It's very enjoyable to be able to say, like, wow, these people have fought for this thing that I can enjoy now. I appreciate that. We got to keep it going because we're past that point of stigmas, but pointless. You know, stigmas and labels. I don't need any of that stuff. What I need to do is enjoy my life and this person that I'm with, and we're just going to keep rocking.
Well, that's fucking beautiful.
No.
Thank you so much for joining us, you guys. This has been awesome. I am really pissed that that club is closed because I want to go check it out today.
Yes, I appreciate God you being it. So honest and authentic and promoting the whole idea behind this podcast, which is, like Michelle always says, bringing normalcy to something that people don't understand, because we think you guys are amazing and we love the way that you... I think you guys are amazing, and I love the way that you have expressed your experience here, and I think it'll be helpful. I mean, it's been helpful to me to understand sort of your journey with all this and how you got there, and I want to go to the club.
So. Yeah, like I was saying before, even if somebody listening to this doesn't think that's for them, the idea that it might help them conceptualize that it's out there and it's okay.
Not judge somebody else
for making that choice. That's my fucking goal. Like, that's all I give a shit about, is that people are free to be themselves. And the fact that all of this happens in such a mutual, consensual way makes it all incredible to me.
It's great perspective. So,
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Amber and Keith.
We could talk all day.
Well,
because there's so many things we didn't even get to.
Not even close.
We'll just have to have you back for another episode. Yeah, you might be back.
Bring the floggers.
Yeah, bring those floggers.
If you see us come in with a briefcase, you're in trouble.
Well, we wouldn't turn you away.
Yeah. This isn't that kind of house.
On that note, thanks for joining us, everybody. We can be found online at prosecotheory.com. You can send us an email, cheers@prosecotheory.com. We are on social media at Prosecco Theory, and we would love to hear from you. So get in touch. Thank you again for joining us, you guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers.